Welcome to the Top 8 Movies podcast, presented by Top 8 Media. Every week we share top 8 lists from movie lovers across the globe. We also dive into actors and actresses' top 8 movies according to IMDb scores. And hear many reviews from our resident film reviewer, Mike Morgan, as he reflects on his top 8 films of each of the last 34 years. We have special edition top 8 lists on more specific topics from the movie industry. Send us your top 8 list to be read out on future episodes. Just DM us on Instagram at top_8_media. Thanks for tuning in, and let's crack on with the show. Welcome back, everybody, to Top 8 Movies from Top 8 Media. My name is Owen Morgan, and I'm sat down with my co-host, Jessica Rose-Johnson, and we talk all things movies through the power of Top 8 Lists. So, it's a big day today, guys. A really big day. You just heard us do Idris Elba. That was super fun. Since then, I've been going looking at some of his other stuff I need to watch, and I'm super excited. But we're going to go pretty classic today. If you didn't know already from the title, which would be weird, we are looking at Oscar winners. So this is best film category only, and we'll have the ones that have most, we'll do a list of the ones that have won the most as our industry, and then we'll dive in, me, Jess, and my dad, which will be super awesome. So Jess, I think we talked about this before, but for any new listeners, are you at all influenced by whether or not a film wins an Oscar of any kind? Does it have an impact or not for you?
Think it really has an impact either way. I feel like sometimes things will get like a ton of awards. I'm like, oh, meh. While other times there's movies that I've absolutely loved that wasn't even put up for an award. So I think it's fun. I'm really excited about this list. It brought back some good memories, and there's a lot of cool movies on here that I'm excited to talk about though.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm kind of like, I'm more of like, if I love a film and it gets an Oscar, I'm like super excited. I'm like, that's so cool. Like, that's such a good film. It's like I'm in the reverse. I'm just like, yay, after I've seen it. I'm not like, I want to watch it because of that. I want it to get an Oscar once I love it. It's kind of how I see it. I'm a bit biased as I go through it. But what's really nice about today is we're going to have some older stuff, because we don't really have much of a classics come up on the show, really. So, I mean, what a chance it is just to like shine a bit of a light on that. Maybe we should make more of an effort, maybe, to like a 60s top eight, which I'd struggle with. I'm not sure if I've seen anything. So, shot myself in the foot there, like I do with the horrors. But yeah, there's some good stuff here. Personally, they're good lists, but I actually think we've had much better lists than these, because we've been restricted to just Oscar winners. So that was quite interesting. I'll have to really sort of like really think about it. I say that, and I've got about 100 honorary mentions there at the bottom. So I don't know why I'm saying that. Clearly, I'm tired, guys. I'm tired, as always, standard. So with our industry list, we're looking at the films that have won the most Oscars, and to put them in the correct order, because you can imagine lots of films have got 11 wins. So we need to put them in some sort of order. So then we base it on box office. So, you know, if three films have 11 Oscars, we'll put in order of the billions, basically, essentially, some of these. So that's how we're going to do it. So it's going to lend itself to quite an interesting list altogether. So Jess, as always, I'll hand over to you to do the industry. So if you can let us know the film, the year it came out, how many Oscars it has, and how much money it took at the box office.
All right, starting in our number 8 spot, we have Gone with the Wind from 1939, has 8 Oscars and brought in $3.4 billion. In the number 7 spot, The Last Emperor from 1987 with 9 Oscars, bringing in $44 million. Next spot, Gigi from 1958 with 9 Oscars, bringing in $63 million. In the number 5th spot, we have The English Patient from 1996 with 9 Oscars, bringing in $232 million. In the number 4 spot, we have West Side Story from 1961 with 10 Oscars, bringing in $44 million. In the number 3 spot, we have Ben-Hur from 1959 with 11 Oscars, bringing in $98 million. In the number 2 spot, we have Lord of the Rings from 2003 with 11 Oscars, bringing in $1.1 billion. And in our number 1 spot, we have Titanic from 1997, also with 11 Oscars, but bringing in $2.2 billion.
Thank you very much. Wowza, Titanic is the one messing around, is it? I know it had a re-release, didn't it? So at some point recently. That probably helped quite a lot. Maybe that shouldn't be included. But anyway, let's go through the list. I've noticed that neither of us have seen Gigi, Gigi, Gai Gai. So let's have a moment of silence. Sorry, we are sorry. We haven't seen that. So let's ignore that one. So what are your initial impressions? It's a lot of, it's, I don't know, it's like classics mixed with epic. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a really great way to describe it. Because I was trying to think of a way, like, you just have some, like, West Side Story, a beautiful classic that's even been remade. And then you just have some, there's no way anyone's going to ever remake The Lord of the Rings, right? Or Titanic. Like, those are just amazing films. So it's very interesting, the list. And it is kind of exciting that there's only one that we both haven't seen. Now that makes me want to go back and actually watch it or look a little bit more into it.
Yeah, I don't feel the same way. I don't think I'm going to go back and watch it, to be honest. Well, I feel bad now. But yeah, it's an interesting list. Titanic, Lord of the Rings, awesome. I'm like, okay. I feel a bit sad about that. I feel I have that. I feel sad that I have that impression. Oh, yeah, it's all right. When I'm looking at our list going, yes, like your one's really good. My dad's is really good. And there's stuff missing from that one, actually, which I'm really surprised by. Oscar-wise, some of the stuff I've got, I'm like, oh wow, I didn't even get in the top eight. Okay, so it'd be quite interesting to see how that unfolded. But I guess we've got to remember here with Oscars, it could be like screenplay, score, costume. So I mean, it's a bit blurry, isn't it? That's why I think our lists are quite powerful because it's not thinking about any of that, is it? We're basing it on cinema experience, or movie watching experience. So that's really cool. We'll leave that one for now. So yeah, let's crack on with something a little bit more personal, which is great. So we are now going to move on to my list. And me and Jess, of course, like to get a little bit involved in our honorary mentions. So for the films that didn't make it and that we feel sad for, we feel deserve a shout out. So check out this list I'm about to tell you of things that didn't make my list. You ready? Very epic. I mean, this is listening itself. Schindler's List, amazing. Lord of the Rings, amazing. Million Dollar Baby, amazing. Forrest Gump, amazing. Slumdog Millionaire, fantastisch. Beautiful Mind, very good. And Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, which was so weird, but I kind of loved it. So big love to all of those films. I'm sorry you did not make it into my list. Right. I'll give you my list and then I'll put a spotlight, no pun intended, on one of the positions. I'll put a spotlight on three of the films. Good detail. So my eighth place is King's Speech from 2010. Then I've got Ben Affleck directing the film Argo in 2012. Then we have, based on a true story, Spotlight 2015. Then we have 12 Years a Slave 2013. Can't believe that didn't get more than eight Oscars. Titanic is my number four, controversially, 1997. I've got Gladiator. How did that not get more Oscars? Year 2000. The Departed in 2006, and then a bit of a curveball, guys. But I've gone for Hurt Locker, 2008. I love that film, so it's a bit out there. So, with that out there-ness, what are your thoughts, Jess, before I go into any detail?
I was a little surprised by the order of some of your movies, but I know from previous discussions there's some of these that you absolutely love, so it doesn't surprise me on there. And I think what does surprise me, or maybe make me feel guilty, is there's a couple movies that you've mentioned more than once that I still haven't seen. Oopsies. So I have seen your top four movies, but I have not your bottom four.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Like 12 Years a Slave, you're very naughty for not seeing that yet. And as you are a true story hardcore fan, the fact you're not seeing Spotlight seems absolutely crazy talk to me. But it's on our ever-growing list that we both have. We are got so much homework. If this was, yeah, a school thing, the homework's incredible, incredible amount. But what I'll do is I'll shine a light on three of them. I think I've done. Yes, I'm doing. I think Argo in King's Speech, so I can tell you just why you should bump them up your list to watch. That is. So let's have a look. Oscar winners. Here we are. So let's kick off with King's Speech with my boy Colin Firth. And I say my boy just because he's British. And ever since he was in The Kingsman, I've loved him forever. So King's Speech, IMDb. 8.0, pretty good, huh? Rotten Tomatoes, 94%. Hello. And Rotten Tomato Audience, 92%. That's incredible. So Colin Firth, Geoffrey Rush, and Helena Bonham Carter. So, I'm thirsty. God, why am I so thirsty? What's going on? So England's Prince Albert, played by Colin Firth, must ascend to the throne as King George VI, but he has a speech impediment. Knowing that the country needs her husband to be able to communicate effectively, Elizabeth, played by Helena Bonham Carter, hires Lionel Logue, Geoffrey Rush, an Australian actor and speech therapist, to help him overcome his stammer. An extraordinary friendship develops between the two men, as Logue uses unconventional means to teach the monarch how to speak with confidence. And the critic's opinion is Colin Firth gives a masterful performance in The King's Speech, a predictable but stylishly produced and rousing period drama. Very true, because it's kind of like a period drama with a little bit of like politics in there, but it's done in this kind of, kind of gritty, stylish character development-y way. It's hard to explain. And Colin Firth was known for his sort of deadpan, kind of charming, comedy-ish guy from Bridget Jones and Love Actually, and all of that kind of stuff. But actually, he's a bloody brilliant actor, and he just played this incredibly. And the scenes when he's doing the speech and stuff, it just hooks you in. It feels like you're in the room. You're like, come on, you can do this with his stammer and everything. And it's a beautiful movie. I'm so glad it got the acclaim it did. So does that tickle your fancy there at all, Jess?
I definitely have been meaning to watch this one. It is on my list. I think it's really good. And I love things that are tied to history. Me, I love my true stories, but I also love anything that's kind of just inspired by historical events, even if it's not super true story. So I think it'll be a good watch. And I like that you talked about his role in that one because it'll be interesting to see him play something different.
Yeah, definitely. Ironically, kind of because of him being so posh British, it kind of suits well to his role. But because he's not, doesn't usually play that role. It's weird. It's weird. It's like the role he should play, but he hasn't, and then he gives it a go. I think he nails it. So yeah, that's King's Speech. Right, Argo. IMDb 7.7, Rotten Tomatoes 96%, and Rotten Tomatoes audience vote 90%. Again, did really, really well. Directed by Ben Affleck, starring Ben Affleck, Bryan Cranston, and John Goodman. So, plot. On November 4th, 1979, militants storm the US Embassy in Tehran, Iran, taking 66 American hostages. Amid the chaos, six Americans manage to slip away and find refuge with the Canadian ambassador. Knowing it's just a matter of time before the refugees are found and likely executed, the US government calls on extractor Tony Mendez, played by Ben Affleck, to rescue them. Mendez's plan is to pose as a Hollywood producer, scouting locations in Iran and train the refugees to act as his film crew. Critic review, sorry. Tense, exciting, and often darkly comic. Argo recreates a historical event with vivid attention to detail and finely fraught characters. So that plot's just weird, right, guys? Weird plot. What the hell? But it just works. It's amazing. It's kind of a bit gritty, and they've even filmed it in a way that makes it feel like it's been made in the 70s, the way they did it. It was very interesting. Obviously, the set design, all that helps with that. But it's such a cool story, such a weird story. I think that's why it's so enjoyable and so bizarre. And yet it is kind of a bit dark in a comic-y way. But it's so unique to this day. And I love that. I think it deserves a bit of love. So, Argo, what are you thinking, Jess?
I think, why haven't I heard of this movie before? Or maybe I have and I just don't remember it. It sounds like a really cool story, and I could see why someone might think it's dark comedy, but I also feel like that could like totally happen. That could be a real thing. I think maybe just with my military background, it has my brain spinning like, wow, like that's a very cool concept. 'Cause you think of barriers. How do you overcome barriers? And it's like, here's a way. We just pretend like we're producing a movie. Like, how cool is that? So I will be excited to watch that one as well.
Oh, good. I recommend it. Just go and check out the trailer, guys. Anyone's listening, because not many people might have heard of it, even though obviously got the Oscar and everything. But yeah, so unique. And we need more of that, definitely. Right. We talked about this film like so many times recently. So we don't need to talk about it too much. I'll just repeat the plot, but we don't need to stick around on it. It's been a major feature. So The Departed, IMDb 8.5, Rotten Tomatoes 91%, and Audience Tomatoes 94%. So directed by Martin Scorsese, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Matt Damon, and Jack Nicholson, and Mark Wahlberg. How did I not include Mark Wahlberg in that list? I'll see. South Boston cop Billy Constakan, sorry guys, yeah, I'm just not going to do names, right? Leonardo DiCaprio goes undercover to infiltrate the organization of gangland chief Frank Costello, played by Jack Nicholson, as Billy gains the mobster's trust. A career criminal named Colin Sullivan, played by Matt Damon, infiltrates the police department and reports on its activities to his syndicate bosses. When both organizations learn they have a mole in their midst, Billy and Colin must figure out each other's identities to save their own lives. The opinion was, featuring outstanding work from an excellent cast, The Departed is a thoroughly engrossing gangster drama with gritty authenticity and soupy morality, whatever that means, we come to expect from Martin Scorsese. So again, we talk about loads. I love cop stuff. It's always going to do well with me. I just love it. Anything, and especially someone undercover. It's a niche that I love. So, in a couple of words, Jess, anything else to say about this film?
I think that was a really great write-up of the film. Yeah, we've talked about it before, but I think it's right. It's actually, it came on the TV again the other day, and I thought, man, you know, like this is a much better movie than the first time we talked about it. I feel like the more the movies come up, and I'm like, yeah, watch this again. I'm gonna watch it from a different angle or from a different point of my life. So I think it's a really fun movie, and it's got a lot of actors that you know and love now because it's almost 20 years ago. Wow. That's always really cool too.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And yeah, for all of those who are new to the show, go back, guys. This is the opportunity to go back, check out some old episodes and hear a lot more about, well, quite a few of these films. And just to honor the Hurt Locker, obviously, I didn't mention it. I just thought, you know, it was a female director and it was just, I don't know, I love my army stuff as well. I just thought it was so good, the story behind it and everything. Guys, go check out the trailer. It's so good. Big love to the Hurt Locker. I have no idea why I didn't do a write up for that. Just double check. Let me just. Okay, interesting choice, Owen, but that's fine. I might let Jess hook us up a little bit later on. And speaking of that, when we get back from the break, Jess is going to be sharing her top eight list, as so will my dad, a resident film reviewer of 30 years, who pretty much knows what a good list looks like. So we'll be back after the break. Welcome back, everybody, to the Oscar Winners edition of Topic Movies Podcast. So, Jess, let's hand over to you. You're going to share with us your list, and then you're going to pick out three as well and show a bit of love. And the two of the ones you're doing, I've not heard of. So, I've heard of them. Sorry, what I'm talking about. You're going to find out funny, guys, when you find out what they are. Of course, I've heard of them. I just haven't seen them. Anyway, over to you, Jess. Give us your top eight and also give some honorary mentions if you like.
All right. I do have a few honorary mentions. So, Green Book, great story. Chicago did not make my musical list, but I really enjoy that movie. So, I want to give it a shout out. And Million Dollar Baby, I also thought it was great. Of course, there's a million great movies, and we could go on and on, but yeah, I just threw those out there. So, now into my top eight that I think were better than those three. So, in my eighth spot, I have The Hurt Locker. From 2008, kind of an interesting dynamic. You're number one, my number eight, but we'll go with it. In the number seven spot, I have Schindler's List from 1993. In the number six spot is where I have Gladiator from 2000. In the number fifth spot is where I have Titanic from 1997. In the number four spot, Forrest Gump from 1994. In my number three spot, I have Dances with Wolves from 1990. In the number two spot, The Sound of Music, 1965. In my number one spot, as if it's really going to be a surprise, is Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. So really excited about my list. Is there any that surprise you? I mean, I'm pretty sure my number one doesn't surprise you, but.
Yeah, let me try and have a look. I've known you for quite a while, and we've now on nearly 50 episodes. I say I'm surprised by Sound of Music, so you can tell us about that in a minute. We haven't really talked about that before, so I'm like, okay, I'm getting some insight here. Lord of the Rings, obviously. Dance Wolves, I wouldn't have known you would have put that there, so that's quite exciting as well. Forrest Gump, yeah, totally makes sense. Titanic, Gladiator, yeah, we talked about all these. Yeah, it's probably just those two that you're actually going to be talking about. So, yeah, I love your list. It's a really, really good list, but I want you to know, I don't know why anyone needs to be pitched on Sound of Music and Dance of the Wolves. You should have seen it. I should have seen it. This is unacceptable. So over to you. Pitch to me and the audience alike.
I am really surprised that you have not seen Sound of Music, but I'm not surprised that you haven't seen Dances with Wolves. But I'll start from the top down. So I'll start with the lovely Sound of Music, starring the one, the only, Julie Andrews, has Christopher Plummer and Eleanor Parker. It's such a beautiful movie. It has an 8.1 on IMDb and 83% on Rotten Tomatoes. Look at me adding that in. And the director is Robert Wise. So it's set in the 1930s, and it's when Austria, it's set in the 1930s in Austria. It's a very heartwarming story. Obviously, there's music, and it is based on a real story of the Von Trapp family, and they were singers. They're one of the world's best known concert groups, and this was in the era immediately following World War II. So Julie Andrews plays the role of Maria. She's kind of this tomboyish house assistant and the Australian Abbey, and she becomes this governess to the home. They had lost their wife, or, well, they lost their mother, so she kind of fills in this mothering role to a Navy captain. There's seven children in this house. Way too many kids, but she basically brings about love and light into a house that has experienced a very sad time losing their mother, but also being in this post-World War II and dealing with all those complications in the world as well. So she's able to bring in light and love through music, and it's really beautiful, and seeing the children where they are at their life and how they grow and how she's able to support this family during this very tragic time. So I love it. I think it's really beautiful. It is a 2 VHS type movie because that's the era I grew up in. And this movie, I did actually watch both VHSs. Unlike Titanic, I would normally stop after the first one because I didn't want to watch the second one because that's where all the sad stuff happens. So what are your thoughts on that little bit of sharing?
Oh, 2 VHSs, eh? Those were the days. Oh man, and we used to have the 2 DVD things as well. God, that was weird. God, are we getting old, aren't we? Yeah, I just don't want to watch it, to be honest. I don't know. I got some sort of fucking issue with Sound of Music. I don't know. I have no interest in it whatsoever. I don't know. I think it's because I used, when I was a kid, like, I'd hang out with my mates or whatever, and they'd be like taking the piss out of all the songs. The hills are alive. And I think the problem is I think they invaded my brain when I was like a teenager or whatever. So I was put off very early on, some sort of weird brain trauma around it. So I'm sad. No matter what you say, that's not on the list, I'm afraid. So I'm really sorry.
You know, I understand that. It's kind of like with me with Titanic, my name Jessica Rose. I went by Rose majority of my life. So that movie has a little bit of like a two, because people would always tell me growing up, hey, Rose, where's your Jack? Yeah, why'd you let go of Jack? You kill him, and I'm like, oh. So I could see where there's boring. Like, I have a little bit of a with Titanic. I still love it, but there's still that little bit of Well, maybe I can convince you with Dancing with Wolves.
Yeah, I'm not a Kevin Costner guy, so you're gonna really have to hammer this home for me. Come on, let's do it.
Wow. Well, not only did he star in it, he also directed it. So there's that. It also has Mary McDonald and Graham Greene in it. And maybe, just maybe I can play off of the fact that it's kind of war related. So it's around the Civil War. So Kevin Costner plays a Civil War soldier, and he develops a relationship with a band of natives, and he's just attracted by the simplicity of their life and their lifestyle. So he chooses to leave his former lifestyle as a soldier and say, you know, I'm going to move on. I'm just going to live this life of peace. And you can almost like get that, right? Like a Civil War soldier or any kind of soldier who's been experiencing war, like they just want a life of peace. So the natives have observed him, so they give him this name, Dances with Wolves. And then there's a wolf in there that he makes friends with, and he's welcomed into the tribe, and he ends up falling in love with a woman who has also been raised by the tribe. But then there's tragedy, of course, because nothing can be calm and beautiful without life getting in the way. So it's a really beautiful movie, and it has this nice dynamic of, you know, this guy just being a soldier and just wanting a peaceful life and just wanting to move on and live a life, and how things still get in the way. So it has a rating of 8 on IMDb and 87% on Rotten Tomatoes. Don't know if that was convincing enough for you, but I do love it, and I am a Kevin Costner fan though, so that probably makes it easier for me.
Yeah, it was a great pitch. Really, really good pitch. Yeah, that does sounds really, really interesting. I've seen the trailer multiple times. I know what the film is. I'm not an idiot, so it's kind of like, yeah. I think you pitched it really well. I do want to watch it. I don't know what's going on. Just watch it. I mean, watch it. Come on, we're in the vortex of our life and so many films. But no, thank you. That it does sound really, really good, obviously, and I should make a real effort to be a true child of the 90s, really.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I mean, it was good like 35 years ago too, so a different version of Kevin Costner maybe.
definitely. I'm trying to think what else did, who did Waterworld? Was that Kevin Costner? Waterworld, or was that Mel Gibson? I think it might, if it was him, I really like Waterworld. It's gonna be embarrassing if it's not. Let's do some live fact checking on the show. We'll have to do a Kevin Costner list and see if I can, show
Waterworld.
myself the light. Waterworld.
Oh, okay. Now I see the poster, and now, yes, you're right. It's kind of,
Yeah, I love Waterworld, so okay.
I was totally thinking a different movie, but yes.
Okay, well, that's great. Well, okay, well, there you are. Right, so Hurt Locker, I went number one, you went number eight. What a difference. So now pitch on my behalf why I made it number one, and do it well, because otherwise I'd be like, why did I make it number one again? So you're under pressure here to honor my number one. Let's do it.
Oh man, well, I'm sure you'll have something to add to it too. So we'll make it a team effort here. But The Hurt Locker stars Jeremy Renner, Anthony Mackie, and Brian, last name with a G. It was directed by Kathryn Bigelow. And this is set, another war movie set during the Iraq War. So they're following the death of a really well respected staff sergeant on this team. There's Sergeant JT and Specialist Owen. They find their explosive ordnance disposal unit saddled with a very different team leader, which, as you know, like all things, the team leader or supervisor can make or break things. So it definitely takes some twists and turns. And Staff Sergeant William James, he is a risk taker. He seems to thrive on war and thrive on the adrenaline that it brings. But when you're defusing bombs, it's a whole nother ball game. So this movie for me, I actually know someone personally that really, really reminded me of Staff Sergeant James. And it's kind of interesting to see those dynamics, especially when I've had similar training that they've gone through. But it has an IMDb score of a whopping 7.5, kind of like murmur. But Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 97%. However, I think it's a great movie that shows you different dynamics and how much that leadership can change and affect the outcome of war and outcome of really any task that you're involved in. What would you love to add to it?
Yeah, the main thing you mentioned there, which I remember it, is just like so intense. You know, some of the scenes are so intense. I'm not usually into that sort of anything that's intense in that way. Like, I don't want to feel uncomfortable when I'm watching a film, but I was like, oh my gosh, it's so good. Like, oh God. And I think that's why I loved it so much. And Jeremy Renner, like, you know, he gets a bit of stick for his roles, Hawkeye and Marvel and everything, but he's pretty incredible. And he deserves a lot more respect than he gets as an actor. I think it's really beautifully classed, beautifully filmed. Like I said, the intensity, the energy around it all is just so, it's so well paced. It's just masterful, really. And it gets nowhere near enough respect compared to the other Iraq-based stuff, not just war, but just, you know, that sort of part of the world and the American influence on it all and that. It was just weird that it just didn't. I know it got the Oscar, but not many people can be like, oh yeah, the Hurt Locker, are they? And I feel that's really sad for me. So glad that both of us have shined a light on it here today. I'm not sure. Yeah, because it wasn't in the other list, was it? Nope. And then we'll see if my dad's got it though. We'll see. Little Easter egg, maybe not. So I'm really glad with your list because you've stuck to your niche, however you want to say it. But we all have them, don't we? Like, yeah, your sort of fantasy stuff in with your Star Wars and with the... Anyway, people know on my crazy hardcore action. So I always love it when we rock up and be as authentic as always, which is awesome. Speaking of authentic, let's see what my dad has got in store for us to see if there's anything new. He's got a few little write-ups for us as well, which is really, really cool. So let's dive in. In his eighth place, he has Departed. So he doesn't agree with me, not as high. And it's the first time today, believe it or not, guys, The Godfather is here, 1972. Can you believe no one has mentioned that yet? That is insane. The Silence of the Lambs is in his sixth place, 1991. Carissa, if that's the right film. Fifth place is The Deer Hunter, which of course is Robert De Niro in his very early years. In fourth place, we've got American Beauty. So that's the first time we've heard that one today. 12 Years a Slave is back, 2013. He's got Titanic in second. I'm surprised that my dad's gone for that. I say I'm surprised he did a full write-up review over on our Instagram page. So on Instagram, my dad reviews stuff, I review stuff, we do retro reviews, which is super fun. And he's done a full review over on Instagram. Go check it out. And his number one, I'm not surprised. It blew his mind. I remember back in the day, it's Schindler's List, 1993. So Schindler's List has been all over the place tonight on various lists. But I'm really glad that it's got to the top of someone's. I think that's really special. So again, that list is kind of like, I feel like it's like a blend of all that we've been doing. It's kind of like some classics, some epics, some masterful stuff, and just some gritty stuff in there too. So yeah, what's your initial thoughts on his list? It's a bit complicated, isn't it? Because there's a lot of the same stuff, but there's certainly a vibe about this list, which seems to be a blend.
Yeah, he's definitely got a little bit of this, a little bit of that. The 12 Years a Slave, that'll probably always get me until I watch it, huh? But I've seen most of them. I don't know why I didn't. I just realized I didn't highlight a couple of them, and I'm like, I've definitely seen those ones. Well, I've seen most of the movies on there except for 12 Years a Slave and then Deer Hunter. I think they're great movies, but when I think about it, like Silence of the Lambs, you know, I'm good. I've seen it. Like, I don't need to see it again. My husband used to
Yeah.
torture me all the time with that. It puts the lotion on the skin, and it just goes like the. Like, I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah, it's not like Love Actually, isn't it? Like, yeah, every Christmas I snuggle up, what signs of the laughs. You're right, we should probably do some kind of top eight or one time only list because it's so messed up, which would be really fun. But let's see what my dad has shared, shall we? So yeah, let's get a little write-up for American Beauty, shall we? That'd be cool. So that was rated 8.3 on IMDb, released in 1999, directed by the amazing Sam Mendes, starring Kevin Spacey, Annette Bening, and Thora Birch. So, storyline, multiple Oscar-winning movie that sees Kevin Spacey play a 43-year-old Lester Burnham, middle-aged married man who has lost hope in his life. He has a job that is degrading, has wife played by Annette Bening, who refuses to show him any love or emotion to him, coupled with a daughter, Jane, who hates herself and regards herself as one of life's losers. Then Jane befriends Angela, Mina Savari, who I think was from American Pie, and Lester thinks he has found a way back to find the love he needs, not knowing his death is around the corner. This is a major movie from Brit director Sam Mendes, and he excels on delivery and telling a complex story with epic cast. So yeah, this did. I remember this did really, really well. It's been a bit, you know, we're not putting it on the show, but it's been tarnished a bit because of the Kevin Spacey stuff. So put that aside. We're trying to put that aside on this show. This is a fun show, and yeah, okay, we get it. But you know what I always remember about this film was, isn't this the film with the bloody plastic bag flying in the wind or something? If I remember, and you see, there's loads of like stupid videos taking the piss out of this bloody bag. I'm sure it was this film, just flapping the wind. But anyway, that's by the by. But I remember this was kind of like, it was kind of artistic, if I remember the time. It had like the arty vibe. But whoa, this is like really like, it's got an aura about it. I don't know, I can't remember. I just remember that. It was just, it wasn't your typical Hollywood in many ways. Have you seen this? Yeah, you've seen it. What are your thoughts on that, Jess?
I think that's a really good description of it. And yes, the plastic bag scene from American Beauty. I had to look it up because I didn't remember. It's been a while since I've seen it, but I think it's still, it's a very interesting movie and storyline and concept that I think part of me just wants to say, like, everybody wants to be loved and everybody wants to be seen. But sometimes that's taken a little too far, maybe is a way to say it.
Yeah.
So it's been a long time since I've seen it, though. I'd probably want to rewatch it to be more familiar with it again, like where I am now in life versus when I saw it 20 years ago.
Yeah, well, I think my dad kind of nailed it, really, you know, telling of a complex story. It's very complex. It was like artistic and floaty, but it was also really complex and complicated stuff. So I guess that's probably why it won, right? That's what the people were looking for when they were voting. So that's fair. Oh, look what it is, guys. It's Silence of the Lambs for Jess. I'm sure she wants to hear all of this again. So let's let's share it back to her. So Silence of the Lambs, rated 8.6 on IMDb, and it was released in 1991, directed by Jonathan Demme, starring Anthony Hopkins, Jodie Foster, and Scott Glenn. Storyline, based on a huge worldwide bestseller from Torres Harris, we see Clarice Starling, played by Jodie Foster, an FBI trainee, apply to question Dr. Hannibal Lecter, played by Hopkins, a psychiatrist imprisoned for 8 years in a maximum isolation cell for being a serial killer and generally very creepy. That's Ida Dayton, who cannibalizes victims. She need is to get better understanding. What the hell? She need is to get better. She needs to get a better understanding of the method and motives for the killings, as another serial killer is on the loose, having killed 5 victims in a copycat method. After that, we saw a lot of films with copycat stuff in the story. Gripping, weird, but compulsive watch and deserving of its Oscar wins. Clarice. Did I say I've seen this? I said I've seen it, which is actually not true. So my bad. We have color coding on a spreadsheet, guys. I mean, just know what each other's seen. I don't know why I highlighted that because I haven't seen it. And as you can imagine, with my traditions, I will not be watching it because any horror or psychological creepiness, it ain't for me. It would just freak me out and I'll be scared for the rest of the evening. So it's not meant to be. So would you advise me to keep that going and still not watch it? If that's
okay,
my
issue. So I was shocked that you had watched it. So now that makes more sense that you hadn't, because I'm like, it is intense. Like, I love psychological thrillers, don't get me wrong. I love studying serial killers. I got introduced to them when I was in high school, but yeah, it is a disturbing movie, but it's like the Saw movies, like don't watch those ones, not for you, but those are for me like very psychological. Those are also very gruesome. I don't feel like Silence of the Lambs is very gruesome, but psychologically gruesome, maybe that's a good way to put it. So yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a darkness thing, you know, the darkness inside of us that could be sparked by tragedy or trauma as a kid or whatever. It's just a bit much. I'm really fascinated by childhood trauma from a professional standpoint with my coaching and everything in my previous podcast. But yeah, no, I don't want to see it. You know, some people say, why would I want to see that, you know, like some people, why would I want to see a war film where everyone's killing each other? It's horrible. Like, why would you want to see that? And I'm like, yeah, I get it. It's a bit weird. But in a way, I don't know. It's not, we're not doing it for fun. We're like, oh yeah, are we? There's something about the human psyche that wants to know that we're safe. We can watch these things and know we're safe. But in a way, maybe we can prepare ourselves for something by watching it. It's very complicated, but we're not watching it for some sort of creepy, weird thrill. It's so complicated, isn't it? What do you think? What do you think?
I
There's a
think
whole other podcast.
it's like thought-provoking. I think entertaining. I think I have this conversation all the time when I talk about like the Saw movies, is people are like, I can't believe you enjoy those movies. And I'm like, all of them is how thought-provoking they are, the psychological aspect behind them. Yeah, there's a lot of gruesome stuff, but like, why did he do it? And then maybe that's like with the serial killers, it's like, why do they do what they do? You know? And it's I'm literally thinking about like all these times in my life where I studied different serial killers. But it's entertaining, but I think it's also thought-provoking. And maybe some people like watching movies to just have the scare out of them. But I've seen it. It's definitely a movie that gets quoted a lot and it can bring up good conversations. And people, when they quote it, like when my husband always say that, you know, it puts the skin, gives me like the heebie-jeebies. But I know he's just joking around. It can be intense. It can definitely be intense.
I think there's one key thing you said there. I think the word enjoy is incorrect. I think people use that word and it's not the right word. We watch films for many different reasons. I don't think using the E word is appropriate for all films. That doesn't really make sense to me as a, it's not the right word. I don't know what the word is. It's not that. Yeah,
Escape.
okay. Yeah,
Because
it's
that's
kind
true.
of.
I watch a lot of movies. It's like an escape. Escape your own reality. I did get hooked on a reality TV show once because my life was really crazy at that time. And then watching it made me really grateful for my life and my drama. So that's true. That's a good point.
Yeah, escape and exploration. It's also exploring what it is to be human too. Anyway, this is getting very deep. This will be a special episode where we talk about the psychology of movies. So we'll leave it there. But this is your chance to vote, guys. So A, B, C, and D over on the Instagram. So you'll see a really cool poster that I've made with all our images and photos from the films and stuff like that. So yeah, you can go over there in the comments and vote for A, B, C, or D. So that's industry, me, Jess, or my dad, Mike. You just pop in the comments or DM us. The league's getting very tasty at the moment. So when you tune in for our anniversary episodes, every 10 episodes, you'll be able to catch up with the latest stuff. And that's just super fun, guys. Get involved. And obviously, if you want to share a list, suggest a topic, and I go, yeah, cool, let's do it. And you send me a list, and then we'll add it in. So get involved. That'd be lush. So yeah, head over to Instagram now and vote. We thank you for listening. And in our next episode, we will be diving into the films of 2013. And there's a very, very fascinating stat that's going to come along this episode to tune in to find out what it is. The first time ever on our podcast, we've had a stat such as this. So we will see you next time for 2013. Send us your top 8 list today to top_8_media. If you find it too hard to create your top 8 of all time, then why not a top 8 from a certain actor, actress, genre, or director? You can even make it more niche. For example, the top 8 films set in space. Your list could inspire, so join the top 8 media contributors today. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.